have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
And I'm Rob Schuster, filling in for Anne. Thank you for having me back.
Great to have you here. And we know you're also an expert on what's going on in Britain these days with the president's visit. We'll talk about that. But let's talk about the headlines. It's been a very rough week. Trump and company are vowing a really chilling crackdown on liberal groups and specifically pride flags.
What we know about the alleged killer of Charlie Kirk.
What a week. And we're going to look at Kirk's history of bigotry against women, people of color, and LGBTQ people.
And without ruling on the merits, the Supreme Court gives a win to trans teens in South Carolina.
But the creator of the trans flag herself has fled the United States for Costa Rica.
And Florida activists do something very, very clever. They get very creative about how to keep rainbows visible amidst the state's crackdown.
Here's one for Rob. The out gay ambassador from the United Kingdom to the United States was fired due to his close relationship with Jeffrey Epstein.
The Republican-led U.S. House makes a breathtaking $2 billion in cuts to domestic HIV care, treatment, and prevention programs. Will the U.S. Senate block the cuts?
If we make them. The United States, on its own, destroyed millions of dollars worth of contraceptives rather than let them be distributed to poor countries.
We've got all the LGBTQ angles on the primetime Emmy Awards that were a huge rating success, including one for the late legendary Paul Rubens.
Oh, and we'll talk a little bit about Robert Redford, whose breakthrough role was a bisexual film star in 1965. He's died at the age of 89.
I remember that. And finally, better late than never, Andy, a TV soap, a legendary TV soap, gets its first ever gay male couple. Ooh.
So how are you, Rob?
Really, really well. Let me just say at the top of the show, I love your theme song to this show. I think after the overture to Gypsy, it's the theme song to Gay USA.
You know what it is?
Tell me.
It's Danse Macabre by Sansung.
You picked it.
We got it basically free on the internet.
You picked an excellent tune, an excellent tune.
Thanks. And you know, since we are going to be talking a lot about the president, he is over there in Britain, and you're kind of an expert on that. How is he being greeted over there? We saw a little projection on Windsor Castle.
Yeah. this happened. Yeah, this happened just before he arrived. There's a film, a short film, about Trump, Epstein, and Prince Andrew, and it was projected on the side of the castle yesterday before he landed. They were furious about it. They took it down within minutes, so it wasn't up there for very long. However, now we live in a world of social media where a short meme, just something that's 5 seconds, 10 seconds, can live forever. So the first headline of Trump's big meeting with the king, the big state visit, was a headline that neither the king nor the president wanted. But he is there, going to be there a couple of nights. Do you want to talk about it now or later in the show?
No, what
do you
think? Go ahead.
Yeah, we have some exclusives for you. So insiders in the palace tell me that Melania and Donald have requested separate suites. They are staying in Windsor Castle, which is very unusual. The last president to do this was Ronald Reagan. And so they are staying there in the castle. However, they will be in not only separate suites, but also too, they brought separate sheets. They've brought their own sheets to this visit. It does sound very bizarre, but we should remember that Camilla, the Queen, and the King actually have separate houses. And his mommy, Queen Elizabeth, and Prince Philip, they often stayed in separate rooms too. So a good headline, but if you really dig into this story here, not that unusual. The trip seems to be going okay. The King made Kate and William join him to welcome the president. The Brits know how to do this. The Brits know how to put on a show. And as we know, the president loves a show more than anything.
Well, I have to say, I certainly don't require my guests to bring their own sheets, but when they do, and I don't have to wash mine, I'm very appreciative. Well, let's talk about all the horrible stuff that's happening this week. Mm. I mean, after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, J.D. Vance did Kirk's radio show or whatever it is. We have a picture of them, and they are announcing that they're now going to use this opportunity, they didn't say that, to crack down on left-leaning nonprofits that they are calling terrorist networks. We've already reported that Stephen Miller, he's the guy on the left there, has already labeled the Democratic Party as a terrorist organization. It's just, I mean, the language, the threats, what they're going to do. And, they're very serious about this. I mean, they want to go after the Ford Foundation, for God's sakes, which funds a lot of progressive organizations. And they want to go after George Soros, the Open Society. They want to go after The Nation magazine. You know, it goes on. Maybe they'll come after us. I don't know.
It is very telling that the vice president, a sitting vice president of the United States, decided to co-host, or in this case, host a show. It's a wildly popular podcast. It also streams on YouTube. I did a little research. Millions and millions of people watch this. This could be the biggest episode ever. It was the first episode after his assassination. And so this was not by accident. Insiders are telling me that this was done on purpose, and it was the vice president's idea. He himself decided, I should host the podcast. We know, Andy, as filling in on television for different friends or you having your own show, it doesn't just happen. I'm not just sitting here by accident. Anne's not on, and I was asked to fill in, and then there's some preparation here. So don't think for one minute that the vice president stumbled into this. It was a conscious decision, and what it's telling us is that he will continue to support Charlie and more dangerously his views. These are not going to go away with the death of the person who said them.
And here's something I don't want to be naive, but I don't completely understand. Trump and the others complain. They call us fascists, and that is triggering violence against us. And we're going to go after Antifa, which is not an organization. It's just the idea of being anti-fascist. So if they don't like being called fascist, shouldn't they be anti-fascist? Shouldn't everybody? We fought World War II with you people in Britain and France and all those things to stop the fascists, and we won. But now they're ascendant in the United States. And then Trump is now flirting with a pride flag ban?
Yeah, that's right, Andy. So Trump is now flirting in a shocking Oval Office moment. He flirted with the idea of banning the pride flag. He seems to be suggesting it should be banned within DC. He's comparing the LGBTQ+ flags to symbols of, quote, domestic terrorism. He's called the flags incitements and said this is akin to burning the US flag. Advocates are alarmed that he seems to be wanting to turn a symbol of hope into a target. Once again, people are pushing back and saying this is just Trump shooting his mouth off. He says a lot of things in the Oval Office and doesn't follow through. Although, let's be clear, he says a lot of things that he also does do. So maybe we will see a ban of pride flags in D.C. And if it starts in D.C., what we've learned is it will spread. It doesn't just stay in D.C.
Well, of course, and we're going to get to the Florida situation where they want to ban them in the street. But, it actually is, for a lot of right-wingers, it's like waving a red flag at a bull. It drives them crazy. And what happened in West Hollywood?
We're down in West Hollywood. Hang on, let me pull this one up, Andy. Skipping ahead of myself. West Hollywood blasted for lowering pride flags for Charlie Kirk. So the city lowered their pride and their trans flags to half staff for the slain right-wing activist. The move has sparked outrage within the community and with drag stars, and one critic who said that this is just so shameful. Now, official site compliance with Trump's national order, saying this was compliance, this was not an endorsement. However, they have promised to revisit this policy to better align with the city's values. Really interesting, Andy. These flags came down. And it looks like they were scared about defying the Trump administration's rules here, guidelines here, and then the pushback has made them reconsider it.
They lowered not the American flag, the Pride flag.
Pride flag.
So maybe they were trying to make a statement about, you know, the sadness, not about Charlie Kirk, but about, you know, what he did to gay people. We'll get into that. And then, of course, this week, we don't spend a lot of time on it. Trump is suing the New York Times for $15 billion, charging that they defamed him. But again, you know, and he threatens everybody. I'm going to get millions from you, threatened an ABC reporter this week. So what's happening on our side? We're not backing down. Rise and Resist was at Trump Tower this week. Put that photo up if you can, Rich. Democracy dies in a police state. I see the actor Kathleen Chalfant there, second from the left, among all my friends in Rise and Resist. And this photo was by Jackie Rudin. But Rise and Resist is out there. And I asked Jackie, you know, how are you all feeling, given the fact that you're one of the targets now of the administration? We're not backing down, she said. We're not backing down.
That's all the right, way to go.
Yeah, good for them.
And that's the way to go. 15 years ago, I got a legal letter from the Trump organization. It was long before he was president. I was interviewing Marla Maples for a talk show. I had a late night talk show, and she talked about him in a way that he did not like. And Michael Cohen was still working with him at the time, and they fired off a legal letter. We didn't back down, and they did. So often standing up is the way to go.
Yeah, but now he's the
President of the United States.
A little different. All right. Now, this is all very serious. Tyler Robinson and Charlie Kirk put their pictures up. This is the alleged assassin of Charlie Kirk. It actually seems pretty clear that he did it. He says that he did it. And, you know, there were such rumors going around the entire week about who he was and what happened. But let's talk about what we've learned. He texted to his roommate, who he calls my love, I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated out. I came from a conservative Mormon family in St. George, Utah, where my own close friend and roommate is from. His mother told the police that her son had moved to the left politically over the last year, become more pro-gay and trans rights oriented. Now, they're all MAGA. So, you know, again, all this has to be sorted out, because we sort of heard that maybe he was part of a farther right group, you know, with what's that guy's name?
It was a group, you're right, Andy, that was even more right wing. Yeah. And that was the rumor. It has not been proved yet. But the reason they were saying is that Trump wasn't right wing enough. Charlie Kirk was not right wing enough for this young man. It has not been proven yet.
I'm thinking of. Yeah. Anyway, so just before now. Of course, you all saw this, or maybe you heard it, just before Kirk was shot. There was an attendee, a non-gay guy, Hunter Kozak, who was asking the question, do you know how many transgender Americans have been mass shooters over the last 10 years? And Kirk responded, too many. In reality, of course, the mass shootings are overwhelmingly by cisgendered men. And when the same audience member then told Kirk that the number of trans shooters was 5, they then asked Kirk if he knew how many mass shooters have there been over the last 10 years. And then Kirk's last words were, counting or non-count, not counting gang violence. So, I mean, it was always, everything he said was tinged with, Kirk said, was tinged with racism and bigotry. And, you know, yes, he did face people and talk, and he didn't deserve to get assassinated in front of his family. We're not for that. But what else do we know? Prosecutors are saying that Robinson's roommate was transitioning from man to woman and that they were in a relationship. So, you know, that's become a big theme on the right. Oh, this is a trans thing, trans, crazy trans people. What else? So, that, you know, when this news started coming out, when they announced the indictment on the gay listservs, they said, brace yourself, because we're going to be under attack for this, as if we did.
Glad has been really, really active here and put out a fact sheet, which I think is very important at the moment, saying there is no evidence for trans terrorism, and the false claims are dangerous. They said after mass shootings and online extremists and these false claims blaming trans people, they put out a fact sheet. I have it here. It says there is no evidence of this at all. In fact, trans people are 4 times more likely to be victims of crimes than perpetrators. And so I think these facts are very, very important. GLAAD was very quick here and making a point very clearly.
And sad to say, and I'm not trying to accelerate it, but obviously this is going to increase the violent attack on trans people. And of course, Turning Point USA, which was Charlie Kirk's group, has gotten a surge of kids who want to join it. And then
there's Pam Bondi, the attorney general. She says she will now prosecute hate speech. And she even got pushback from the right on this. They said, are you crazy? Even Charlie Kirk was clear. Hate speech is speech and it's protected under the First Amendment. But Trump said, to Jonathan Carl at ABC, we'll probably go after people like you. You treat me so unfairly, it's hate. But, hate speech is an issue in Europe, right? They have laws about it, but we do not.
We don't hear, but what you said about the pushback is very important. The Wall Street Journal, that is no liberal paper, has an amazing op-ed in the paper today saying that free speech is really very important. In fact, it is essential, and they really think Pam Bondi here needs a lesson, an education in free speech. It's quite an op-ed.
She's a disgrace, and so is Marco Rubio. He has any non-citizen who says anything nasty about Charlie Kirk from even coming into this country. And that's what they're doing. They're combing everybody's, social media. Did you say something we don't like about him? I mean, forgotten that, and then we're not going to let you into, it's not about becoming a citizen. It's like, we're not even going to let you into this country if you don't love Charlie Kirk.
Right. Marco Rubio is also getting blasted for scrapping queer rights tracking. So 61 members of Congress are demanding that the Secretary of State restore reporting in human rights reports. They've erased gay people. Garcia, Johnson, McBride accused Rubio of erasing vital protections. They sent a letter warning that this is something that is very, very dangerous and it isn't partisan. This is about, quote, life and death, and Marco Rubio knows it. He's not responded.
Well, before he was a complete Trumper, and he used to be an anti-Trumper, of course, when he ran against him, he slammed the Chechen government, Marco Rubio, for their anti-LGBTQ abuses and said the United States should use our voice on the global stage to call attention to these horrifying acts and to ensure that they are condemned in an appropriate way.
Mm.
All right. Now, I don't know how many times I have to say it. Of course, it was horrifying to see Charlie Kirk get assassinated in front of a crowd. But there, a lot of the stories about him are glossing over his legacy. This guy cited the Bible to say that stoning gay people is God's perfect law. He said, and he, of course, he's the one who said, look, I think it's worth to have a cost of some gun deaths every year so we can have the Second Amendment and protect our God-given rights. That's a prudent deal. It's rational. And he opposed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. He said Muslims only move here to destroy the country. American Jews encourage anti-whiteness, and that men should physically attack transgender people, and that all women should submit to their husbands, and that black professionals steal their jobs from more qualified white people. It goes on and on and on. He called Ketanji Brown Jackson an affirmative action hire. This brilliant justice on the court. Anyway, we could go on and on. he was not somebody to be admired.
Let's move on, Andy, to other topics that we have going on in the news. A lot of news to break this week. So Pete Buttigieg is warning that America needs a different future, and is actually blasting Biden's re-election bid. Kamala Harris, in her new book, calls it reckless. And now Pete is saying that Biden should not have run in 2024, arguing it did weaken Democrats. And he calls for Democrats to build a different kind of future without exactly saying what that future would be.
Well, he better get busy formulating a vision, because I see Democrats now realizing that people are moving on these issues. And they don't, you know, I think the Democrats thought, oh, if we look more moderate, we will win. It's not going to win against, and I will use the term advisedly, fascism. You've got to be a very strong party with a strong vision and be willing to fight back. And that's why the star is rising for Gavin Newsom and J.B. Pritzker and Murphy, others, you know. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about what they're doing to the national parks. You know, they've ordered the removal of information on slavery at multiple national parks, in an effort to scrub them of corrosive ideology. This is one of the very famous photographs. It was taken during the Civil War. It really helped galvanize the North in terms of fighting the Confederacy, and of an enslaved person, Peter Gordon, who obviously brutalized during his years as a slave. And they were told to get rid of pictures like this. They don't want to see things like this. Now, what's going to happen to the Stonewall National Monument? What's going to happen to anything? I mean, what's going to happen to the Holocaust Museum? We're not going to be able to show the horrors of anti-Semitism, which they act like they're so concerned about.
A chilling, chilling thought. A little bit of good news, Andy. Maine defies Trump's Department of Justice over student athlete demands. So the Department of Justice subpoenaed and sought the names of every Maine student athlete, including minors. Now, this is related to Pam Bondi's claims that cisgender girls are losing scholarships to trans athletes. Maine is pushing back, saying, "We will not expose our young people." The governor, Janet Mills, slams this as federal overreach, saying this is about politics, not athletics. And insiders are saying Maine is not budging, and this fight is only just beginning.
Well, the fight is, it's the war between the states again. Now the more progressive states are like fighting against the crap coming out of the CDC and saying, look, we're going to control vaccines as best we can. We don't have the funding that you do. But we're going to get things to people, and we're going to do it. We're going to make sure you get your vaccines, because they've already been cut back in many places. Trump was sued for deleting radical LGBTQ web pages, and he just lost. Medical groups sued after hundreds of LGBTQ health resources were removed from federal websites. And they've been ordered to restore them, and they are starting to do some of that. The president's executive order said you got to eliminate references to gender and gender identity and blah, 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 blah. But the Washington State Medical Association and other groups sued, and they got some of this stuff back. And HHS said in the settlement, it remains committed to its mission of removing radical gender and DEI ideology from federal programs, subject to applicable law, to ensure taxpayer dollars deliver meaningful results for the American people. What they mean is the cisgender white American people. All right. How about the Supreme Court? They have now allowed trans kids in South Carolina to use the bathrooms aligning with their gender identity. Now, the decision was made for technical reasons. They didn't get into the substance. But South Carolina said, in light of what the president says about transgender people, we want to kick these kids out.
And now a three-judge panel, you know, ruled that they had that they couldn't do this. And so a six-justice majority denied South Carolina's request, with Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch in dissent. So they're not ruling on the merits, but they're not granting emergency relief to South Carolina on this. So 13-year-old trans kid, you get to go to the bathroom you would like to for at least a little while.
Mm. There's a shocking new study out, Andy, that finds 85% of elections in 2024 were weaponized against LGBTQ people. Outright International reviewed 61 elections during that time period. And out of the 61 elections, they found that 51 used anti-queer rhetoric. The Trump campaign, don't forget, spent over $200 million on anti-trans ads in battleground states. Similar tactics have now been used in India, Brazil, the European Union, Canada, and even the UK. The report also highlights, though, queer resilience, saying that the queer community is mobilized and is fighting back, not just for their rights, but for democracy.
Right. In Boston, a federal court quashed the Department of Justice's subpoena demanding the Children's Hospital there to turn over private information about young patients receiving gender-affirming care. The judge said that it was the DOJ subpoena was an astonishingly broad array of documents and information that are virtually unlimited in scope, and you can't do it. So they were told to back up. All right. In Georgia, the full bench of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit on September 9th rejected a challenge to Title VII of the Federal Civil Rights Act when Georgia County's refusal to cover gender-affirming care surgery under its employee benefits plan. So that's a loss.
Marriage equality hero Mary Boorto still believes that love wins. So there's so much ugliness going on. Mary argued the landmark case in front of the Supreme Court in 2025. She says now that marriage equality is widely accepted, and even amongst Republicans. She received the Presidential Citizen Medal from Joe Biden. And so she is really standing strong, saying she's still optimistic. She is not being naive about the challenges out there. They are ugly. However, she is standing strong.
Well, Mary Bonato, of course, is a tremendous hero in the marriage movement. And, you know, when you hear, what's the justice's name, Amy Coney Barrett, sort of say, well, this isn't like abortion. Marriage is a more fundamental right. You get the sense that they're not going to get rid of it entirely. Mm. But what we worry about is that they'll just give religious people all kinds of options to opt out of, even if they're public officials, from doing their duty if they have a religious objection to being tainted by being associated in any way, shape, or form with homosexual marriage, even though these same officials never objected to dealing with people who were divorced, which is also against God's law, you know, according to at least the Catholic Church. So anyway, you know, it's all hypocrisy. Mm. All right. So the House, the National Defense Authorization Act, which is a must-pass bill, you know, they have loaded it up in the GOP House, the Republican House, with six anti-LGBTQ amendments, banning medically necessary health care for transgender military dependents and service members, banning transports at U.S. service academies. That's not even an issue. Banning collection of gender identity by the Department of Defense. Banning trans facilities at military facilities. And banning pride flags at Department of Defense facilities. Now, here's the thing. And I wrote to them, you know, and the people who are opposing this. And I said, okay, it's alarming. But is the Senate going to go along with this? Because we still have the filibuster power in the Senate. Enough Democrats can stop something. The question is, are the Democrats, enough Democrats, going to keep that out? And then the bill has to be reconciled. So all I can say is we hope. By the way, this is the week that the EPA stopped collecting emissions data from polluters. Just a little small note to make you more alarmed.
All right, let's go to Oregon. A state representative there, Cyrus Javadi, he's leaving the Republican Party and running for re-election as a Democrat, citing his gay son and Republican book banning efforts as one of the many reasons that he's leaving the party he once called home. And of course, he raised a whole bunch of issues. He was the only Republican to vote in favor of a bill to prevent anti-LGBTQ book bans from taking place in the schools. All right, should we go to Florida?
Let's do Florida. I have a good news out of Florida, Andy. We have a rainbow revolt in Florida. A parking lot has turned into a protest canvas in Florida.
Well, we do have a video report on this. So, not that one. Let's run the video first about what happened.
All right, so this is just 4 miles away from the Pulse nightclub site, where now dozens of artists have gathered to honor the victims of the Pulse tragedy through art. It's an initiative led by the owner of Seven Bites after the response, of course, from the state painting over the rainbow crosswalk outside of Pulse. Spectrum News 13's Marcia Leva joins us from the parking lot of Seven Bites.
Dozens of artists got up bright and early Monday morning to set up the canvas for their next project, this time with a twist.
Usually I work on a canvas, so to do something like this is really cool and special.
They each have a parking spot to get creative. Abigail Smith is a full-time artist and teacher in Central Florida. She's one among thousands of people who applied to be part of Parking Spaces for Pride.
I saw this online, and I'm very involved in the community, so I thought this was a really nice opportunity.
The project started as an idea by chef owner of Seven Bites, Trina Gregory, to host an art event celebrating love, joy, and community in Orlando. It comes weeks after the removal of the rainbow crosswalk outside of the Pulse Memorial.
This is more an act out of love. This isn't a political statement. This is literally a way for the art community to come together and spread some joy for all of our Orlando community. We're the city beautiful for a reason.
Gregory opened the parking lot to 49 artists to work on their designs and honor the 49 lives lost at Pulse.
I think that what happened at Pulse was just an absolutely terrible event, and I think that it deserves to be recognized and never forgotten.
While Melissa Rush works on her painting, she says she has enjoyed the sense of community.
Today is a great opportunity to just kind of like bring communities together and just kind of solidarity, supporting our gay community and supporting Pride.
Organizers say the response has been overwhelming, with more than 1,000 artists applying to take part in this project.
Just making sure that everybody sees that the artists out here are supportive and we're behind everybody. And there is a sense of community. Like, we're not split. There's a sense of community in Orlando, and we're trying to support that and let everybody see that.
Smith says her goal is to make something that everyone can enjoy. She's working on a colorful flower.
And the way I'm making my piece is sideways. So my piece is actually made for the car next to me. When they get out of their car, they're meant to look over and they see a beautiful piece. Or if they're walking from the building and walking over, they see this nice piece just to give them a little smile.
In Orlando, Macia Leiva, Spectrum News.
And the organizers of this event say they hope Parking Spaces for Pride will grow into an annual tradition to ensure the 49 lives lost are never forgotten.
So let's hope all the rainbow crosswalks that have been eliminated in, well, the colored crosswalks that have been eliminated in Florida will be replaced by these private efforts. Mm. It's wonderful. So encouraging.
It is, isn't it?
And the less encouraging is Delray Beach. They had this beautiful memorial there in the whole cross section there. Just gorgeous. The entire intersection was covered with rainbow colors. And look what they did to it. It's very depressing that they want to make it a black and white world. But everything is black and white to them. But there is another rebellion. A way to get your potholes fixed in Florida. Look at this thing. If you see a pothole, paint a rainbow in it and the state will fix it overnight. Absolutely fantastic. You know, I'm proud of our people sometimes. I really am.
Me too. Another little bit of good news is LGBTQ elders are redefining aging with dignity.
Are we?
We are, Andy. We are. By 2050, it is estimated that one in four Americans will be over 65, will be openly LGBTQ. Now, elders often face isolation. You are two times more likely to live alone in the queer community and five times likely to be not married. And so the isolation risks here are tremendous. However, elder queer people are redefining this phenomenon. One in four Americans over 65 by 2050 will be openly gay.
Well, I mean, I know, if you don't mind me saying, you're a married man, but I'm a singleton. I was married for 25 years, not to the same guy, but I had 25 years of partnered life. I'm still friends with all of them, the ones that are still alive. And, I still see them as friends and things. But I also have friends. I don't feel isolated, but maybe it's the reason I keep doing this show.
Well, you can't stop doing this show, Andy. Do you ever see yourself as married again?
I'm going to be 72 years old next month. Come on.
It's just a number. You're marvelous.
Oh, God, you're very sweet. All right. In Michigan, a city judge ruled that the Muslim majority city council there in Hamtramck, Michigan, did not violate the Constitution when it voted to ban pride flags on public flagpoles. What they end up doing is, because they hate us so much, they ban all flags other than like the American flag and things like that. But it's very sad to see. In Iowa, Iowa's got to pay $85,000 because state troopers blocked trans students from going to Capitol restrooms. Now, this was back in 2020 when Iowa still had a law that banned discrimination against transgender people. They got rid of it. They're the first ones to get rid of such a law. But they did it when it was illegal, and these students sued, and they're getting $85,000. Good.
Good.
All right. Okay, following the election of Donald Trump, Monica Helms, we got a picture of her. You want to talk about this?
Yeah, so Monica Helms is the creator of the trans flag. She has now fled America and has a new life in Costa Rica. Monica is a Navy vet and creator of the trans flag, has relocated to Costa Rica. She cites Trump's re-election and rollback on queer rights as the reason. Her wife recently lost her job at the CDC in federal cuts, growing uncertainty there. A GoFundMe page has already raised $10,000 to help with relocation costs. Monica said the following: "In America, I couldn't sleep. Finally, here I do." Very sad.
She was a Grand Marshal at World Pride in 2019, which was, yeah, you know, Stonewall 50. She said the idea behind the flag originated during a conversation with Michael Page, who created the bisexual flag in 1998. And she, by the way, never sought to monetize the trans flag, unlike the person who created the progress flag, who wants a cut every time you use it. So good for her. And we're going to miss her. We're going to miss people like her. It's not easy to get out of this country, but in Ohio, the Department of Motor Vehicles violates free speech rights by denying a driver a license plate reading "gay." A federal judge ruled. The DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles said it was inappropriate, invalid. But they had apparently allowed plates that said "no gays, no homos, no faggots." They allowed those. So the judge said, if you're going to do that, you got to let them say something positive, and this guy won. That was all right. Talk about what's going on with our friend Jason Collins, the first openly gay player
Jason
in the NBA.
Jason Collins. NBA trailblazer Jason Collins has revealed a brain tumor battle. So Jason is 46 years old, the first openly gay NBA player diagnosed with a brain tumor. In a statement, his family is asking for privacy. Also, they are asking for support and welcome that and prayers. Since he retired in 2014, Collins has been a leading queer advocate, recently headlining Nets Pride Night, and has defended trans athletes, played in 13 NBA seasons. Terrible news, brain tumor battle Jason is going through.
Yeah, he and his longtime partner, Brunson Green, who's 57, they got married back in May. Green is a Hollywood movie producer and earned a Best Picture nomination for the movie The Help.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Quite a formidable. We wish Jason the best. We hope he pulls through. He's a real trailblazer and a hero. I mean, so many in professional sports are still, except for women, are reticent about coming out. All right. You got an update on Lil Nas X?
Lil Nas X. I love how you say that, Andy. You're down with the hip-hop crowd. So Lil Nas X is in patient treatment following a felony arrest. He missed his court date. He's 26 years old. He's a Grammy winner, and he faces 4 felony charges after an August 21st arrest in Los Angeles. He missed his September 15th court hearings. His lawyers confirmed that he did enter inpatient treatment out of state. He faces 5 years in prison if convicted. He has pled not guilty. His father has put out a statement saying he is remorseful and he's still going to need help. He's trying to get help. Lil Nas X took to X to reassure fans and wrote the following quote: "Your girl's gonna be okay, boo. It's gonna be all right." So in treatment at the moment, and we'll have another court date soon.
Let's talk about a couple of people that we lost. I did not know about this guy. His name is Barnett Shepherd. He was the champion of Heritage on Staten Island, New York, our most conservative borough. He's died at the age of 87. We know he's gay because in his obituary, it says he married his spouse in 2024, who survives him. But he was totally devoted to historic preservation on Staten Island, which is so conservative. And he really saved historic Richmond Town, all the landmarks on Staten Island. He was amazing. And, you know, he cared about it. And he was like, built a little movement that he was the head of. And just absolutely terrific. And as for why he personally liked Staten Island, he said, "We knew what was going on in the world, but we like being out here in this quiet, isolated place and away from the latest trends about everything." Sweet guy.
Sweet guy.
Gone at 87. Mm. Let's talk about, not a gay guy, but Robert Redford.
Shocking news. He passed away at his ranch in Utah. He is an absolute movie star. And I think to younger people out there who I've been talking to, who maybe were not as familiar with him as we are, he was the Brad Pitt of his generation. He was a superstar. For several years, he was the number one box office star in the world. He took some really, really interesting roles too. Somebody who had his fame, his money, his power, could have pretty much made any movie they wanted to, and he did. And the movies he picked were often political, were stories that were deeply emotional, were stories that some actors would probably shy away from today. Died at home. And I think his biggest legacy is not going to be necessarily his films that we are lucky enough to have forever, but the Sundance Film Festival was the love of his life. I met him a few times, and both times I met with him, it was deeply, deeply starstruck. He is an old school celebrity. He knows Barbara Streisand. And so I was very excited about that. He wanted to talk about Sundance. He wanted to talk about independent films, new films. That was his passion. And he did it beautifully.
And his fourth film role, this is back in 1965, was with Natalie Wood in Inside Daisy Clover. Now, there's a little, they get married in the film, but Wood was an aspiring actress who marries him, despite the fact that he is secretly gay. And so that was quite a bold choice for him to do. He won Best Male Newcomer, a Golden Globe for that. But, you know, I also, the films that he directed, Ordinary People, Quiz Show, are two of my favorites.
Oh, you know, gorgeous.
Favorite films. He also spoke at an event organized by Equality Utah, because he was very involved in Utah, by the LGBTQ group there. And he said that it was un-American to discriminate against gay people. I'm here for the same reason you are, equal rights for all. And I'm going to share this story from it. I just saw it before we came on the air. This really defines Robert Redford. He was in the third grade, he said, and I had a friend named Lois Levinson, and she was my pal. And I began to notice this buzz around the school. Somebody was a Jew. And I didn't understand what was going on. I heard the words like kike and yid and things like that. Suddenly, out of the blue in class, Lois stood up and said, "My name is Lois Levinson, and I'm a Jew, and I'm proud of it," she said. Very bold, he said, very brave, but very confusing to me. So he ran home to said to his father, "What am I?" And my dad said, "What do you mean?" And he told the story about Lois Levinson. And my dad said, "You're a Jew." And he said, "What?" I thought my life was over, and I was devastated. I ran to my room, and I was in there a while before he came in and said, "Look, I told you that to make a point." And he said it made a huge impact on me. From then on, I was going to defend anybody in that situation. What a story.
What a story. Thank you. Yeah, what a great family. What a great man. Thank you for sharing. I have some exclusive reporting that the funeral is not going to be a big Hollywood affair. He wants to be buried in Utah. He wants it to be a family affair. For somebody that was as big a celebrity as he was, as he is, he was remarkably un-Hollywood. As you said, based in Utah, spent his time there, loved it there. And so the funeral will be there. He'll be laid to rest in a family plot there. It will not be a big Hollywood spectacle. So if you're expecting to see some of his co-stars, if you're expecting to see Streisand, Brad Pitt, other people that he's worked with, probably not going to happen. It's going to be a small family funeral, which actually tells you an enormous amount about how big this man was.
And, you know, we've already had his funeral, his memorial service, because as soon as he died, it became breaking news, top of the news. Everybody weighed in. Everybody had story. Anybody who ever met him put a story on Facebook, and some of them were quite charming.
Did you ever meet him, Andy? Did you ever bump into him?
You have, of course.
I did. I met him a couple of times. I was so starstruck. I don't often get starstruck, but he put me at ease immediately. He put me at ease right away. He was very, very aware of the fact that he was Robert Redford. Once again, for younger people watching, the Brad Pitt of his day. Like, people just went weak in the knees when they saw him, and he handled it beautifully. Rest in peace.
So many great movies. Check them out. They'll be with us, as you say, forever. All right, forever. International news. Back to Britain. Mm. The Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, had to fire his country's ambassador to the United States, Peter Mandelson, over his links to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. There's Mandelson. This is a picture of the two of them together there on the right. So what's this all about?
Big story that exploded in Britain. The pressure over there to expose Jeffrey Epstein is absolutely fever pitch. And if you're asking why in Britain do they care about this awful American, they care because of the links to Prince Andrew. That's what it's about in Britain. Andrew allegedly was much closer to Jeffrey Epstein than this ambassador. And so if he's going to be fired for his connection, what's going to be happening with Andrew? We put up the picture earlier in the show that just before Trump arrived in Britain, that was projected on the side of Windsor Castle. The Brits are as involved, are as engaged in this story, Andy, as the Americans. It is not going away. Prince Andrew will not go away. Interestingly, we've not seen Andrew yet at any official state functions with the president. However, the day before the president arrived, it was a royal funeral over there, and Andrew was invited. So Andrew is still part of the inner circle, hidden away when state visits happen, but he's still there.
That was for the Duchess of Kent, who we all remember from presenting the awards at Wimbledon, the tennis thing, and she was quite charming. She was a school teacher in addition to being a duchess, but she was Catholic, so they had this Catholic funeral. Right. And then Andrew shows up and he sticks himself into pictures with William, and William was furious.
Ooh, the pictures. So after the service, they come out on the steps, and Andrew right up to William as bold as brass, and William is not having any of it. There are some serious tensions there.
He's not even going to be a prince after William.
Right, yes. We hear all the time about the friction between Harry and his father. My insiders tell me the friction is actually between Charles and William, and a lot of this has to do with Andrew. At that same service, at that same funeral, there are photographs, video of the king laughing it up with his brother, having a jolly good time with Prince Andrew. William is having none of it. But this story in Britain, not going anywhere. It is still a massive, massive story overseas.
All right. More international is what happened in Hong Kong?
This is a wild story out of Hong Kong. So Hong Kong has shut down same-sex rights bills. Activists are outraged. 71 out of 89, that's a lot. 71 out of 89 legislators have rejected limited rights for same-sex couples. The bill would have granted medical decision-making and funeral rights, very basic rights here. And this has been shut down despite the fact that 60% of Hong Kong residents support marriage equality.
Okay. We're running out of time. Let's flip through some of the news, even though it's very serious and very important. The CDC, they took their evaluation tool offline for maintenance because they're removing all things like current gender identity, sex with a transgender person, all these kind of things that used to be part of research. They're taking it away. Last week, a federal appeals court sided with Trump and said you can block patients from using Medicaid as insurance at Planned Parenthood. That's awful. The House Appropriations Committee has released their funding bill. It proposes $2 billion in cuts to domestic HIV care treatment and prevention. Oof. They want you dead. It's just horrendous. We hope the Senate will block it. In New York, MPOX cases are on the rise, and not as bad as it was a couple of years ago, but people should get their vaccines. And then there's the whole thing about RFK versus the hepatitis vaccine. I mean, this week they're going to be getting rid of all the the hepatitis B vaccine. I was in the study 30-something years ago. That's that thing. I was, as a gay man. But they give it to babies now, and they don't get hepatitis B, and they don't give it to other children. And now they're saying, oh, wait till they're four, and they've had a chance to spread it in nursery school. It's just psychotic what they're doing. And then, as I said, the United States trash birth control pills worth millions of dollars, even though other groups had offered to distribute them. And I just want to say, in terms of AIDS news, the Broadway Cares flea market and grand auction is this Sunday, September 21st, in Schubert Alley there.
It is great fun. In my apartment, maybe not on the camera shots, but are several pieces of art that I got from that flea market. The most beautiful Broadway memorabilia at a really good price, too. If you want to get some Christmas gifts or even a gift for yourself, head over. It's a great fun.
We will link to the online auction that they're having, but you can bid anywhere in the country on these things, this theater memorabilia, and support Broadway Cares, who are supporters of Gay USA. All right, the Emmy Awards.
Boom, boom, boom.
Let's trip through them in our last 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
The Severance star, Trommel Tillman, won the Emmy for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Drama Series, the first Black man ever to win the award, and he happens to be an outcast. gay man. And then chime in on any of these. Erin Doherty kissed her girlfriend, Sinead Donnelly, after winning Outstanding Supporting Actress for a limited series for her harrowing role in Adolescence. You may recognize her from her role in The Crown as Princess Anne.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beautiful.
Alan Cumming picked up a second Emmy for hosting The Traitors, beating out RuPaul's Drag Race again. And then everybody was extremely excited about Jeff Hiller beating out Harrison Ford to get his Academy for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Comedy Series for his role in Somebody Somewhere. And he gets up there and he says, these are all openly gay or bisexual people. I feel like I'm going to cry because for the past 25 years, I've been like, world, I want to be an actor. And the world was like, maybe computers.
He's delicious. Backstage, he was talking to one of the entertainment shows, and he said, not so long ago, he was playing a Brit in a haunted house. That's how he was acting. And so good for him. A little note, just a little bit of shade here. Harrison Ford left the moment he lost. He did not stay for the rest of the show. Harrison Ford left within moments of losing.
You have all the inside. Well, you know, I don't want to make any ageist comment, but it might have been past his bedtime. I get tired and I want to go home.
Joe, you look great. I see you out all the time.
Hot late nights. All right, Hannah M. Binder, who's bi, got censored after winning Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series for Hacks. She said, go Birds, F ICE, and free Palestine. That's what got bleeped. And then Pee Wee Herman. He was one of the producers of Pee Wee as Himself, which won for Outstanding Documentary, and so he got an Emmy. Hunted Wives.
Quickly, Andy. I think we have a minute or so left. The Hunting Wives are back for blood. Netflix have renewed the series for a second time. Season 2 is coming out. Brittany Snow has announced it in a cheeky post on her social media. It is sexy. It's twisted. It is a crazy ride. Season 2 is going to be even more intense. So a big hit, renewed.
And what happened in Fashion Week in New York?
Fashion Week has been absolutely crowded with queer punks, queer resistance. It has been taking over New York, several different shows, including one at the Brooklyn Museum, hosted by Dapper Q, have been including lots and lots of gay characters. Queer resistance is a theme, an unofficial theme of Fashion Week, and we're all for it.
All right. Bold and the Beautiful has their first gay male couple. Put their pictures up.
Oh, for grief.
Harrison Cohn and Christian Weissman. Time to talk about it. It's been great to be with you.
I love doing this with you. I can let a little secret out now. We're at the end of the show. Andy was a little under the weather and did this show today because you are a pro. Take the praise, Andy. We thought you were going to have a coffin fit and I was going to have to do a tap dance.
We're out of time.